Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. My guest for this morning is Joyce Lillis. She is a weight loss expert and the founder of the Metabolic Reset Program. Joyce and I will be discussing her latest book, Stop the Torment, Conquer Your Relationship with Food. The book reveals an exciting new intuitive approach on conquering bad eating habits, quieting your inner food voice, and changing your attitude towards food. Good morning, Joyce. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Fine, Johnny. Thank you so much for having me on the program. I'm doing really well.
Wonderful. It is a pleasure to have you on the air with me. Stop the Torment is a great read. It gets right to the point about everything that is to know about our relationship with the food that we eat. Thank you for sharing.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Certainly, Johnny. I grew up and went through school in New Jersey, and I have to say my relationship with food first began at about the age of 8 years old when my mom took my sister and I every Tuesday night to Jackie Gleason's diet doctor. She was weighed in, and she was given her diet pills for the week. And I watched my mom yo-yo diet from 200 pounds to 130 pounds most of my life. And then when I went out into the workforce and was working in New York City, I started to gain weight. So I decided to go on a diet, and I did that by eating small amounts during the day and an apple for dinner, and I lost the weight. And then I fell in love and got married, and I had two children, and the yo-yo dieting cycle began. And as the 70s were changing all around me, my marriage failed, and I went back into the workforce. And that's when I realized that I could move up the corporate ladder, and that was important to me because I wanted to become financially independent. So I was promoted several times. I took a position at Compaq Computer, and I became the first regional vice president woman to run the East Coast for them. But during all of this time, I was yo-yo dieting, gaining weight, and losing weight. And after 12 years at Compaq, I was recruited to help grow a sales force at a company in Florida. I was responsible for over 700 people, and it was always about working with the people and understanding what their goals were and helping them be successful, and that's what led to the success of the company. So after spending 2 years in growing revenue 30% and 28% in the 2 years I was there, I returned to New York and started my own consulting and coaching practice. Mm-hmm. And then several years later, I moved to Northern California, continuing my practice. But 8 years ago, I learned how to lose weight, but more importantly, reset my metabolism so I never had to diet again. So I transitioned my business into working and coaching with clients to help them lose weight, but more importantly, maintain a healthy weight.
Very interesting. When we talk about diet and gaining weight back and forth, being overweight in terms of when we say overweight, do we talk about 5 to 10 pounds? Are we talking in excess of 15 to 20?
You know, it varies. I have clients that have 10 pounds to lose, and I have clients that have 100 pounds to lose. Mm-hmm. For myself, I was up and down 30, 35 pounds and back down. It's really, we have an obesity problem in our country, and
right.
It's really helping people see that. Losing weight is hard, but maintaining weight, I believe, is much harder. So if we get underneath our relationship with food and what triggers us to eat for other reasons than when we're physically hungry, we can truly conquer that and have a healthy relationship with food. So it does vary. Anybody over 20 mm-hmm. pounds, the medical industry believes that they are now moving into the obesity role.
the one thing that catches my eye in reading your book is that, of course, you use the word relationship describing your connection with food, or I guess in many ways for everyone, for that matter, in terms of whenever someone has an issue with eating, it is a relationship. Why do you use such a intimate word?
Because I think everyone has a very intimate relationship with food, and we don't have to share it with anyone. People eat for a couple of reasons. People that never have to diet are truly listening to their physical hunger, and they eat when they're hungry, and they stop when they're satisfied, not when they're stuffed or full. But people that have had a weight problem and have gone up and down in weight have difficulty identifying that physical hunger. And so they're eating when they're listening to that food voice in their head, which I call their inner food voice, or they're eating because of emotional reasons.
Interesting. You had mentioned to us about you were on your own yo-yo diet yourself over the years, and of course with all the personal and professional challenges that you went through. What life epiphanies led you to your current vocation?
Well, after I lost the weight, after yo-yo dieting for over 30 years, I realized that I had to reestablish my relationship with food. I knew that even if I had all the money in the world, I could hire anybody to do anything for me except how much, when, and what I was going to eat. That had to be my decision. And so I had to get honest with myself. And I wanted to stop the torment that I was dealing with. And when I say stop the torment, I'm talking about two kinds of torment. The first is that long-range disappointment in myself for going through all the effort to lose the weight and then only to find myself regaining it in a year or two. And then the immediate torment of having to negotiate and compromise and rationalize about what, when, and why I was going to eat. And when I started my practice and I started to work with hundreds of clients, I realized they were going through the same process I was. And that was the epiphany that brought me to starting a practice as well as writing the book.
Why did you write Stop the Torment, Conquer Your Relationship with Food?
Well, I was so excited about the concept that has been overlooked by so many that have struggled with yo-yo dieting that I wanted to write Stop the Torment, Conquer Your Relationship with Food because I wanted to share it with others. I know how hard it is to lose weight, and I know how hard people struggle with this. So I wanted to get the message out, and that's what inspired me to help as many people as I possibly could.
Interesting. Please give us a synopsis of the book.
Stop the Torment, Conquer Your Relationship with Food is a new approach to weight loss and weight management. It offers stories and information, and in part two, there are exercises. So when readers understand the long-established habits that are at work, they can start to understand what's happened and why they're eating. It talks about stopping the battle between willpower and temptation, how to identify the inner food voice, how to make shifts when they're about to go and eat for emotional reasons, and how to trust to learn to identify with their physical hunger so they can digest and metabolize their food properly.
The book is a wonderful read. You have it designed very well in terms of walking people through what they are actually going through with themselves in terms of the challenges and so forth, and you gave some wonderful solutions. What I see in the book is the fact that you are able to walk them through step-by-step programs that we'll talk a little bit later in the show. Coming back to the book itself and putting it all together, what was the most rewarding experience for you?
Well, thank you for that compliment. And, Johnny, the most rewarding experience was I wanted to give people hope so they, too, can maintain a healthy weight while enjoying food. So if they follow through on the information in the book, I don't want them any longer to have fear when they go out to a dinner or a party because they're overeating and they end the night feeling guilty and then they end up promising themselves that they're going to have to start a diet the following week. I want them to understand that there's no food forbidden. It's when and how we eat and why we're eating. And when we get in touch with that, we can eat foods that are really wonderful, but it's in moderation. And when they eat healthy 80% of the time, their body's going to do the work. It's going to regulate and keep them at a healthy weight.
That's true. I like one of the artwork that you have in your book as well. I think this is really funny. Some people exercise to weigh less. I exercise to eat more. And I probably do one of those.
We all have.
How does intuition play a part in your weight loss program?
Intuition, it's an approach so you can enjoy eating with confidence and enjoyment without guilt, without willpower and calculations, but with a natural intuitive awareness. Once they recognize what triggers poor eating habits, they can begin the journey of conquering their relationship with food. So they now are making correct food choices, and they become less and less of a calculation and more of an intuitive process.
Interesting. And, of course, that million-dollar question, why do we eat what we eat?
Well, people eat for three reasons, is my belief. It's the physical hunger. As I mentioned earlier, they eat until they're satisfied when they're hungry. Then there's emotional eating, and then there's the inner food voice. Now, people that have yo-yo dieted are very familiar with the inner food voice. It's the chatter about how much, when, and what to eat. And it goes something like this. I've eaten healthy for the past 3 days, so I deserve to have that piece of chocolate cake. Or I've had this most stressful day. I need something to calm down. So a little bit of ice cream or pizza is going to calm me down. You know, or I'm going to a party tonight, and I didn't eat all day, so now I can eat whatever I want. And that's what goes on and on and on in our heads of analyzing what we can and should eat. Now, when we're on an emotional merry-go-round, emotions come in so many different forms. We can be lonely, depressed. We can be looking for food for comfort. We can be happy, tired. When we're on that emotional merry-go-round, that's when the inner food voice gets quiet. And now we're standing in our kitchen in front of the refrigerator. 99% of the time we're eating alone, and we're eating whatever we can find. We can go from pizza to cheese to ice cream to peanut butter, and it goes on and on. And the inner food voice picks up again when our bodies start to feel sick and we can't eat anymore. And that's when we start to scold ourselves, telling ourselves we're going to start a diet on Monday and we should have never done that and we're never going to do it again. And that's what I want to help people stop.
Does it require a lot of willpower to get on your program?
You know, I don't believe... See, willpower only works for a certain amount of time. Anybody that starts a diet, they use willpower to get started because they're determined now that they're going to lose the weight. But willpower can only work so long because it's not a long-term solution because temptation is just as great as willpower. So when temptation kicks in and people have lost some weight, they might be at their goal weight, they might be 10 pounds from it, that's when temptation kicks in and says, well, just a little bit of bread or a little bit of candy isn't going to hurt me. And that's how that cycle begins again. So we have to get away from the willpower, and we have to get in touch with our bodies so that we're truly listening to what we want to eat and choose those foods. And some of those foods can be fabulous and delicious and have calories in them. But this way you're satisfying yourself, and then you're not going to go substitute something else because you didn't choose what you truly wanted to eat.
Very true. I like your intelligent approach to eating. And, of course, that brings me to the term metabolic reset. What is it?
Well, I learned that I was a person that went all day long not eating so I could eat a big dinner. And what I didn't realize is what was happening in my body is my body was storing the food and turning into fat because it was afraid it was in starvation mode. So I learned that setting up my new program, Metabolic Reset Program, it allows people to eat 3 meals a day and 2 snacks. It's important to eat every 3.5 to 4 hours so we keep our metabolism working efficiently. Our hypothalamus controls our metabolism, which sits in a very small organ that sits in our head, and it can get very lazy. So it doesn't know whether you're dieting or you're in starvation. And if you eat too much food, what happens is the body can't metabolize it, so it's going to store it as fat. So when you start to regulate your meal plan in healthy meals, it resets your metabolism. And it's a process. It takes time. It's not, you don't just snap it on. It's a process, and that's why I work with my clients at a very deep level so we can get underneath the reasons that they developed whatever relationship they have with food, and we can make small shifts getting them ready so that their metabolism is working efficiently.
You're talking about metabolic rate in general, and then you're talking about personalized metabolic rate for each individual as well, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Your metabolism is the rate at which food turns into fuel. So it's a complex biochemical process.
And so each individual, based on their makeup, possibly even their ethnicity, will have a different metabolic rate compared to someone else.
That's correct. And that's why it's so important for me to customize. I use questionnaires for my clients, and we customize what's best for them. So that, and then I make adjustments as they're on the program so that they reach their goal weight.
Does the metabolic rate change over a period of time once you're on the program, so to speak?
Yes, that's what's so interesting about it. It does pick up, because what I found is I found I could go all day and eat very little food and still never lose weight. I eat more today than I did all the years that I was heavier, because my metabolism is working efficiently.
Well, after all, our body is a closed system, so everything affects it. And you talked about in the beginning, one of the reasons why we eat what we eat is because we are emotionally driven. That brings me to the question about the inner food voice. What is it?
Well, people that have dieted are familiar with this. It's the chatter in their head about rationalizing, compromising, negotiating about what, when, and how much to eat. And I call that the inner food voice, because that's, well, I'm going to have a little bit of lunch today because I'm going to dinner tonight. I'm going to want to have a piece of bread and a dessert, maybe a glass of wine. And it just goes on and on and on. And it really gets us in trouble. And we have to quiet that inner food voice. Because if we are not physically hungry, we start rationalizing about what we should eat or what we shouldn't eat. And if you think about it, Johnny, when babies come into the world, they don't have an inner food voice. They don't even have an inner voice yet. They come into the world, they get hungry, they cry, their moms feed them, they stop when they're satisfied, they go back to sleep, they wake up and cry when they're hungry again. We've lost our touch with that. So it's important to get back into really understanding what's happening within our bodies. It's an amazing instrument, and it will work for us if we follow it and listen to it.
How can we identify our inner food voice? Is it something that's easy to do, or is it something much more challenging?
Well, I'm hoping that people that read my book or contact me about my programs will understand that when you begin identifying with your inner food voice, when it's taking over the precedence of physical hunger, that's number one. You want to be aware of what's going on in your mind. Then when you become aware, you know how much you're listening to it. So you can tell how often you're eating because of what your inner food voice is saying versus whether you're physically hungry. If you're eating because of physical reasons that you're lonely or you're looking for comfort or you're just happy, you need to be quiet about that and stop and understand why that's going on. Then take note of that, because if you do indulge in a dessert or some bread or pasta or something when you're not hungry, then what happens? Do you feel guilty, or are you feeling anxious? What's going on within yourself? And what's really important is, because it's a process, it's important to be kind to yourself, because so many people have dieted and lost weight only to regain it, and they feel that that's just what's going to happen. It's a process, and we want to stop that process.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Now, you talk about the five steps to quieting our inner food voice. Please share with us what those five steps are.
Well, first you have to get connected to what's happening in your mind versus your body. You have to separate those two away, and you have to think to yourself, what's going on in your mind? For instance, before I learned about resetting my metabolism, I'd go to dinner, and I'd look at a menu, and I'd say, can't have this, can't have this, maybe this, maybe this. That was my inner food voice. Now when I go to a restaurant, I look through the menu and I tap into my body and what do I feel like eating? And maybe it's Coq au Vin and I order Coq au Vin and I eat that and I eat until I'm satisfied and then I stop. So you need to be aware of how often you're in that voice versus being in touch with what your body is truly asking for to eat. And then you want to know your feelings around it. Are you choosing foods because they're too high in calories and you don't want to gain weight and you want to be good? This good and bad thing has just gotten in the way of us really understanding what's important. And if you're being good and you say, well, I'm not going to have a dessert because I'm good, and you really wanted that dessert, then later on you're going to go get something sweet because you didn't enjoy yourself while you were at dinner. You want to take note of how often you're doing that so that you can learn what that inner food voice is all about. And then you want to recognize it and begin to understand when the physical hunger kicks in and what that's asking for. For instance, a quick story. About a couple months ago, I was given a certificate for a box of See's candy. See's candy is a big thing in Northern California. So I went in, and when I got into the store, the saleswoman said, what kind of chocolate do you like, dark or milk chocolate? And I said, milk chocolate, and I got a truffle, and I went to the back of the store, and I took a bite, and then I took another bite, and maybe I had three or four bites, and I stood there, and I really enjoyed the candy, and it was delicious. Now, before I had ever learned about this and lost the weight, I would have taken the chocolate, put the whole thing in my mouth, eaten it quickly. While I was shopping for the candy, I would have left the store feeling guilty that I even had the piece of candy, and by the time I got in the car, I would have opened up the box of candy, and I would have eaten many, many pieces before I actually even got home. That's the difference.
Giving up to your emotion.
Right, exactly. And my fear and my guilt. So it was given up to say, well, I messed up today, so I might as well just continue to mess up, right? And I'll start my diet tomorrow.
Right. I've often thought about, well, if I eat heavy today, and even perhaps tomorrow, afterwards, the next 3 to 4 days, I can eat light. And then in the end, in the course of a week, is all about laws of averaging. Does that work?
It works some of the time. It works if there's a special event that you're going to and there's going to be this wonderful food and you want to enjoy yourself, okay? But it's not on a daily basis. It's not like, oh, the next 2 days I'm going to just overeat and then I'm going to be good.
Right.
Because you are now you're negotiating with your inner food voice. And you're saying it's okay because you're negotiating saying I'm going to be good. But what can happen after those 2 days of eating more food than you need, something else can come up. You know, life happens. So something else can come up that takes you out to a dinner or there's a party that you didn't know about or you're out with friends and you're enjoying more food. And so you're not really following through on I'm going to be good those next couple of days. So it's finding a balance between enjoying your food when it's available for something special and eating healthy the rest of the time.
So true. Your book highlights 6 stages of change people go through when considering a diet. Please share with us the 6 stages of changes.
Okay. You know, Johnny, when I work with clients, I work through what stage of change they're in because it helps me really get them started. So the first stage is pre-contemplation, and that's when people have dieted only to regain the weight, and they get to a place where they say, why bother? This is my fate. So people are afraid of failing again. Then there's the contemplation stage. That's when a person says, maybe this time I can do it and not regain the weight. So they have a little bit of hope. When I coach people at this stage, they want to tell me every diet they've been on and every reason why they have regained the weight. And that's very helpful for me because it helps me understand what has gone on in the past to help work with them. Then there's the preparation stage. This is the stage that people are ready and raring to go. When clients come to me, they're ready to start the diet, and I have to pull them back because I know if they follow the diet, they're going to lose weight. It's getting to the place where they recognize they're not just here to lose weight, but they're here to change their relationship with food, and that's what's going to help them maintain their weight. And then we move into action, and then we put a healthy diet together for them, and we, while we're doing that, we're uncovering the emotions if they feel like they needed to turn to food for any emotional reasons, and that helps us dig deeper to get underneath why that's happening. Then we have ongoing maintenance, and that's when people reach their weight goal, and they've decided they're never going to eat poorly again, and they're never going to gain weight. And so it's learning from the success of not just losing the weight, but how food played such a significant part in their life that had nothing to do with their physical hunger. And then we have relapse. And relapse and recycling can occur. For instance, I had a client, she lost 65 pounds with me. She did great for a couple of years. I got a call a couple of years later, and she had just come back from a vacation in Hawaii, and she was overly stressed from work, and she needed this vacation. So she went away, and she just ate. She ate more than she would normally eat at home. And she called me, and she had gained, I think, 7 or 8 pounds. But when she got home, she didn't get on the scale. And when she told me what she ate on vacation, it sounded more like it was probably 3 or 4 pounds, but she thought, well, if I eat healthy the next couple of weeks, I'll get on the scale and I'll be back to my weight. But what happened was that she didn't get on the scale, so she didn't know about that. And she was more in her inner food voice on vacation, and she wasn't relaxing anyway. So we went back into the program to help her, and then she took the weight off in a few weeks.
That's interesting. You talk about why we should weigh ourselves daily, that is. And that's something that I've counted a lot of people that having weight issues, they don't want to do that because they know that, well, that could be a false reading. Might be a weight that comes from excess water. What I've been told is that it is not accurate. Rather than doing it once a day, why don't we just do it once a week where we can really chart out that 7-day period? What are your thoughts about that?
Okay, well, you're talking to a gal that didn't get on a scale for 20 years. I thought, my clothes are going to tell me if I'm gaining weight. And we can put on 8 or 10 pounds, and we still don't know it. So when I lost the weight, I realized that if I wanted to maintain this new relationship with food, I needed to get on the scale every morning because I wanted to know where I was so I knew where I was going. Now, there is statistics out by the National Weight Control Registry, and it says that people that get on the scale daily will lose 12 pounds more over the course of them losing weight. So I believe that getting on the scale is very important. It's become my friend. And I have clients that are so afraid of the scale that when we start, they're not going to get on it. But over time, as they start to see they're losing weight, they do. And now they buy a travel scale and take it on vacation with them. When I go on vacation, I just got back from 12 days in New York. I didn't get on a scale all week because I was on vacation. But I came back this morning. I was back last night. I got up. I'm a pound and a half heavier. It's not a big deal. It's just a number. But I know when I get back to eating healthy, it's going to come off.
Interesting. So you use the minor fluctuations, the up and downs, as a psychological motivational flow to help you to maintain your weight.
Yes, because I understand people weighing weekly, and that I'm happy they're getting on a scale to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But what can happen is you can be in that inner food voice, or you can be eating for emotional reasons and still negotiating about how it's not going to really affect your weight because the clothes are okay. But a week later, you can have put on, 4 or 5 pounds. So that's why I believe daily is important.
Is there a best time of the day to weigh ourselves?
I believe first thing in the morning. I get up every morning. I empty my bladder and I get on the scale. I don't get on the scale the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just my ritual, and I think that works best.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If nothing else, you need to find a consistent time of the day to weigh yourself.
That's so true, because if I weigh myself in the morning, or my clients weigh themselves in the morning and then they have a doctor's appointment and get on the scale, they're going to be a couple pounds heavier, because our weight is going to shift once we have our breakfast and we get up and we get moving around. So it's just to see where you are every day and use that number. It's just a number. Don't be obsessed with it. You just want to maintain your weight. So you want to know where you're at.
Right, right. One of the things in reading your book that I got is, let me say this respectfully, dieting can be an easy thing to do. However, changing and sustaining your lifestyle, that's a major challenge.
Yes, this is why we have this yo-yo diet syndrome in our country.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
If you're checking out of a supermarket and every magazine that you're reading while you're waiting to check out has some new diet on it, and it's because people lose and regain and lose and regain. I mean, there's so much out there about people that will lose weight and gain weight. The National Eating Disorder Association reports 20 million people will try dieting every year.
Mm-hmm.
And the average 45-year-old woman has tried 61 diets. That's the reason why we want to stop this torment, this craziness.
Right, right.
So it's really getting in touch with our relationship with food, and it's small shifts that help us maintain our weight.
Right. You're talking about a lifestyle change that really is, you're able to sustain that, versus one of those things where you get into this craving because you're not having something, and then, it's been 3 months now, I'm going to dive into it.
Yeah, and here's the thing about cravings, Johnny. This is what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a craving, and if first you have to identify that it's a true craving. It's not the inner food voice working or you're emotionally upset. Okay, so now it's a true craving. Please go and have some, because if you don't, you're going to substitute food for it, and eventually you're going to go have that anyway.
Yeah.
And you won't eat that much, and when you have it, if it's a true craving, you're not going to want it for a long time.
That's right, yeah. If you satisfy your palate for that short period of time, that's all you need.
Yes, exactly.
Very interesting. Let's talk about one of the things that you have in the book about nutrition and deep breathing. How does deep breathing correlate to nutrition?
Deep breathing is really important for my clients and for myself, and I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. First of all, if we are stressed, cortisol levels will rise within our body, and it does not allow food to metabolize and to digest properly. We don't breathe deep enough as it is to begin with, but it helps us relax. And because we live in a society that we're running so fast and so hard, and we can work 24 hours a day with the technology out there and be connected to our friends through social media, that we're eating while we're doing other things. And so we're not truly relaxed and enjoying our food. So I recommend that we take 2 deep breaths before each meal and just sit and relax, and then eat and enjoy the food and recognize what we're eating. Sometimes we're not even tasting the food because we're in such a hurry, we've got to move on to the next thing. So it's making our meal a priority and something enjoyable, and I believe that doing some deep breaths prior to eating helps us get there.
So true. Gone are the days where everyone gets together for breakfast and perhaps lunch and certainly for dinner. And now everything seems to be done on the go, on the run.
Yes. Oh, how true that is. And eating in our cars, and we're paying attention to the road, and then the phone's ringing. And we've got to stop and make eating an enjoyable experience and a process for us because it's feeding our body. We need this food.
One of the things that I like about your book is that you talk about metabolic-boosting foods, and you've included a bunch of them in the book. Can you give us some of the metabolic-boosting foods that we should include in our daily food intake?
Certainly. I'm glad to. Johnny, there's some warm foods that really help with a study that UCLA did that helps the chemical process burn more energy, which helps improve the metabolism. Green tea revs up the metabolism more than black tea or coffee. And the and some of these are also spices that are very healthy for us. But apples are one of the best foods that we can eat. It has plenty of pectin in it. It's soluble fiber, and it reduces cholesterol, and it helps maintain your hunger levels for a while. So, and it reduces the natural sugar in your body, so you will not have cravings for sweets, and it helps increase the metabolism. Cinnamon, I found, is a great natural blood sugar stabilizer, and it stimulates the metabolism. What I want to say about cinnamon is to buy very high quality cinnamon because all cinnamons are not the same, so that's important. Broccoli, it has nutrients and calcium and vitamin C, and it boosts the metabolism. Garlic is really great for us. It supports blood sugar metabolism and helps control lipid levels in the blood. The one thing I want to say about garlic is if you are cooking garlic and you're about to saute it, once all of the antioxidants in garlic, if you just get the garlic ready and start to saute it, you're losing 80% of those nutrients. So the best thing to do is cut it up and let it just sit for 10 minutes because then start sauteing it, and that's when it works 100%. Olive oil and coconut oil, and I know this sounds counterintuitive because they're high in fats. However, if you're eating cream or butter, it's not really helping you. And these are saturated fats, so it helps to burn calories. Now, it doesn't mean that you just cook with all this olive oil all over or pour olive oil all over your salad, because a tablespoon of olive oil is 120 calories. But having olive oil, coconut oil, or grapeseed oil are the best oils that you can use. Avocado is fabulous. It is high in calories, but again, it's that mono, unsaturated fats, and it helps control the metabolic rate. But again, it's not eating the whole avocado. It's putting some slices of avocado in your salad.
Right.
So there's lots of foods that help stimulate the metabolism and make our food delicious and interesting.
What I like is you have a list of hot peppers, and people don't realize it. You can sweat out.
That's right. I didn't mention that. You are absolutely
right. Yeah. I mean, I love eating spicy food, and spicy food does increase your metabolic rate.
Yes, it does. And, you know, and I'm not big on spicy food, but I like a little of it, and I love when it's there because I think, oh, boy, it's revving up my metabolism right now.
It does kick it up a notch. And, of course, ultimately, drink plenty of water. I think water does not get that much respect in the category of beverage, but water is that almighty thing that we all should drink a whole lot more.
Absolutely. You know, I was never a big water drinker, and now I drink quite a bit of water every day. And when I don't have it, I really feel the difference in my body. We depend on our water. It flushes out toxins of vital organs, and it carries nutrients to the cells and provides a moist environment for our ears, nose, and throat. So having water is very important.
Years ago, when I was in the restaurant industry, not even realizing this, I would drink 1,000 calories a day. Looking back, and once I found out about that, I'd rather eat a piece of steak.
Right, me too.
Because I was drinking iced tea and Coke and so forth. Wait a minute now. I'd rather have something wonderful like a piece of steak to eat.
I know, and you know, some of the coffee drinks, they're so high in calories. You can take all your calories in just by going in, getting some of those coffee drinks three times a day. So it's important. It's not to never enjoy it, but to really use it in moderation when it's something special and not become a pattern that you're doing on a daily basis.
So true. How can a person maintain his or her ideal weight once they achieve it, so that they don't gain the excess weight back?
Well, first, they truly need to get in touch with their body so it signals them when they're hungry, so they're choosing healthy food. They also need to eat every 3.5 to 4 hours. That's what keeps our metabolism working efficiently. It doesn't mean 5 meals a day. It means your snacks can be a couple crackers, a small piece of cheese, a piece of fruit. But you want to keep the metabolism working efficiently. You know, as we talked earlier, getting on the scale every day so that you're honest about where you are and not getting upset over it and just knowing, okay, you know, I need to, if I'm up 4 pounds or something, I might have had a great weekend, so I'm just going to cut back this week and eat healthy, and they'll see the weight, the body's going to regulate itself. They need to choose healthy foods 80% of the time, so they can enjoy indulging in sweet or starchy foods occasionally. It's not that there's any foods forbidden. We put ourselves in this white and black world, that this is good and this is bad. We live in a world of a million shades of gray. We don't need to say we can't eat this and we can't eat that, because when we put in our minds that we can't have this piece of food, then we're going to want it all the more, and we're going to eat more of it than we actually need. So it's truly, you know, understanding when they're physically hungry and getting underneath what their relationship with food is.
How much exercise play into your weight program?
Well, I exercise regularly during the week. I do a lot of yoga. I do some jazzercise. I can tell you that it helps me stay healthy and strong. It doesn't burn as many calories as we believe it's doing. And I think that's what happened back in the 80s when all the gyms became more of a mass of gyms for people to go to, not just bodybuilders.
Right.
And we thought, I mean, I use Jane Fonda, who I love, with her videotape and worked out every night with her. But it didn't help me lose as much weight as I wanted. It burned some calories, but it doesn't burn as much as we believe it does. But it's important. Exercise is so important for our physical well-being. It's the balance that we do need in our lives.
Very interesting. What is the greatest challenge a person has to overcome in order to attain his or her ideal goal?
You know, that's a great question. That's why I wrote this book. Each of us has to correct something in our relationship with food. But first, it's important that we identify how it began and what developed over the course of each person's life so we can make those necessary changes. So it's really what motivated me and inspired me to write the book, because I wanted to reach more people than working just with the clients that I have.
The personal challenges that each individual faces in terms of achieving their goal, are these usually more emotionally driven?
you know, so much of it is emotionally driven. Johnny, I can tell you a story. A person that I work with, she lost 53 pounds with me, mm-hmm. and we kept working together on my maintenance program because she was afraid, always when she lost weight, within 2-3 months she'd start gaining. And something happened. She was at a meeting, and she had prepared a presentation, and she was in a meeting with 20 people, and the woman that she gave the presentation to present changed the whole thing and never told her. When she left the office, on her way home, she stopped at a convenience store and bought nuts and cookies and candy, and she ate it, and she hid all the wrappers in the car. And because I had worked with her for a period of time, she didn't recognize that 20 years earlier, she was working for a family in a gardening center, and she never felt like she fit in. And every day after she left work, she did the same thing. She would buy cookies, candies, and nuts and eat it all the way home and then stuff it in the car. And when I said to her, you went back to a time that doesn't exist today. This is a different story. And mm-hmm. we have to address this story. And the light bulb went off, and she said, oh, my goodness, look what I'm doing. And we were able to correct it. So it's finding out how to connect those dots to help people see why their behavior might have something to do with many years ago, but that once they recognize it, they can change it.
I would think most importantly as well, it's never too late to get started.
No, it's never too late. Look, you know, here I am over 30 years, and I had given up on diets, and I thought, All right, this is your fate. But when I found this, I was so inspired and said, oh, my God, I'm the lowest weight I ever was when I was in high school, and I've stayed there for 8 years. I want everyone to know that. They can do it.
Yeah, yeah. In a healthy way.
Yes, that's what's so great about this, Johnny, is because we're eating proteins and fruits and vegetables, complex carbohydrates, and really good food. And our bodies, that's what it wants. So it's not going on to something that you have to eat this specific food, because I customize it for each of my clients.
One of the danger, or in a way, the word diet in itself, because the word diet come across as like, oh, my God, I got to give up something.
Right.
And that's not true, because what you're looking at is managing and eating the right food based on your personal metabolic rate and how you can digest it and so forth at an optimum level so that you can achieve your goal and maintain it. And most importantly, in this case, what you're talking about is you can basically eat just about everything you want, but manage it.
Exactly. And when I finish with a client, we develop what I call a meal plan. It's not a diet. It's a customized meal plan so that they can eat healthy and then they can enjoy themselves when they're out at parties and not think that, oh, my goodness, now what have I done? I don't want them to go to that place anymore.
Right, because we're not talking about extreme situation where, oh, okay, I got to give up meat. I got to give up of this, I got to give up that. This is more of eating intelligently.
Yes.
That's how I perceive it.
Yes, excellent way of putting it.
I've heard about this quite a bit, withholding gluten from your diet. Does that really come into play, unless if you have developed intolerance for it?
You know, if you think about it, 10 years ago, we never saw gluten-free products on the shelves of our grocery store, right? So what's happened? Well, what's happened is a lot of our wheat in this country has been genetically modified, and that's mm-hmm. what's causing these gluten-free products. So it's understanding what has happened with the starch and the wheat in our country. And it's not that you can never eat it, but you want to eat it in moderation, and you want to mm-hmm. understand about it, and that's what I teach my clients. So and some people have to go gluten-free. And that's a true statement.
Right.
And
right.
we figure that out as we go through the process. But not everybody does, but I think it's kind of a new wave right now that people are looking at.
So true. The big word that you used just now, which I think is so important, is moderation. I think if we do things in moderation, in the end, even the concept of the law of averaging in a week works, but it has to be in moderation.
Yes. Yes, it does, and that's why no foods are forbidden, because if you eat in moderation and you eat healthy 80% of the time, all those other great foods that are out there, because food is just food, but some food is much better than other foods, then you can have that great food and not feel that you're not allowed it.
Right. What would you like for the readers to gain from reading Stop the Torment?
Well, I'd like them to gain hope, awareness. I want them to be free from guilt and self-incrimination. I want them to get answers to how to maintain a healthy weight and how to know they no longer have to fail if they've lost and regained weight.
Wonderful. Where can someone go to buy your book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Well, Stop the Torment, Conquer Your Relationship with Food is sold on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And if you're in Northern California, there's local bookstores that are carrying it. You can log on to metabolicreset.org or stopthetorment.com to learn more about me and the two programs. And you can visit me on Facebook, which is Metabolic Reset LLC, or you can read my blog on my website. So there's many places to go.
Wonderful. How has writing Stop the Torment impacted you personally?
Well, I am so pleased that I was able to write this while I was coaching my one-on-one clients. And this way I can reach more people by writing this book and being on your show and talking about this. I'm so passionate about getting the word out that there is hope and there is a solution for people so they don't have to go through this torment any longer.
Wonderful. What's next for you?
Right now I'm working on a seminar that's going to be offered to the public, and it's going to be posted on Facebook and my website, so that'll be coming up. I'm going to be continuing my quest to help people lose weight and, most importantly, maintain it so diet is no long part of their vocabulary.
One of the things that I'm thinking about in reading your book is obviously you're so passionate about what you're doing. How does that translate to the people around you in terms of your immediate family and so forth? Are you able to energize them to think about the inner workings of eating?
Well, I think it does. I have a daughter and a son and a granddaughter. Mm-hmm. My granddaughter is just 18 months, so she's not, you know, my daughter is feeding her everything organic and making all her food. But it has helped my children and my husband read the book and see the importance of this. Now, my husband has never had a weight problem. So he, you know, it's interesting because I challenge him on why he can eat a huge cookie and come home with a little piece left because he didn't want any more. He was done. So I learned from him. But my immediate family has taken this into consideration, and my daughter's in-laws are very interested in the book and are working on a program for themselves because some of them are excited about looking at food differently.
Very interesting. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the hour. Since our show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
Oh, I'd love to. Johnny, I want people to be kind to themselves. I want them to know that their body is an amazing instrument, and if they allow it to do its work by listening instinctively to what the body needs, they're truly going to have a healthy relationship with food and enjoy eating. I want them to go out and just say, bon appetit, and enjoy being out with friends and not worrying about how much they're going to eat.
Interesting. So eat what you want, but in moderation.
Yeah, and if there's food left on the plate and they tap into their physical hunger and they're satisfied, then stop eating and take it home for tomorrow. And always know there's food in the future. don't worry that you're never going to get that again. And if you're not satisfied, then finish. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I want them to be kind to themselves and enjoy eating.
That's a wonderful recipe for living. Do you have any comments or recommendations with regards to support group, I guess, in so many ways? Because there are people that really need that support from others to kind of keep
mm-hmm.
them on track.
Yes. I find that some of my clients like working one-on-one, but
mm-hmm.
I also have groups of people for support so that they share their feelings with one another when we get together every week. So I do offer that, and I have clients all over the country, in Canada, in England, in Ireland, and we put support groups together wherever they are to bring people together. Others prefer one-on-one. So
mm-hmm.
it depends on the individual.
Wonderful. Well, Joyce, thank you for the great recipe for living that you shared with us just now and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Amy Newmark, the publisher and editor-in-chief for Chicken Soup for the Soul. Amy and I will be discussing the best practices and strategies from their latest edition, The Multitasking Mom's Survival Guide. This book is a collection of inspiring and entertaining stories from fellow multitasking moms sharing tips and pointers to help others organize their time more efficiently to meet the busy demands as today's mothers. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Joyce, it has been a pleasure. Thank you again and have a blessed day.
Thank you so much, Johnny.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.